This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Wednesday, the New South Wales flood disaster triggers calls for reform of the insurance sector as residents count the cost. Should we have another COVID booster? Health authorities meet today to consider a fourth dose for the general population. And 55 mental health inquiries in 30 years. A new study catalogues the toll of repeated hearings and the inaction that follows.
We knew it would be large, we knew it would be shocking, but we could not have envisaged that it would be as shocking as these numbers actually reveal.
Well, first up today, let's take you right into the flood zone. And the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, is visiting flood-affected communities in New South Wales to inspect the damage caused by days of record rainfall. He's announced new emergency assistance payments will be available from tomorrow. The flood disaster has now expanded well beyond Greater Sydney, with the Hunter Valley now among the hardest hit areas. Matt Bamford reports.
A rescue helicopter hovers above rushing floodwaters. Below, a stranded local clings to her fence.
Anybody, even if you've got a sore back, please come and tie sandbags. These guys need help.
Across the Central Coast and Hunter Valley, people are scrambling as water levels rise.
All your locals need help. So if you're on high ground already, please come down and help out your local SES.
85,000 residents are affected by evacuation orders. Rivers are peaking at their highest levels in 70 years. Those who stayed faced a daunting prospect.
Scary, the water's lapping the veranda. We've lost our sheds down the back and a little pod that we had somebody renting, and we can't get out. We're on the priority list with SES, but SES can't get in either. We've got the ladder ready to go in a loft in one of the retreats out the back. We're in our guest house at the moment.
In Wollumbi, floodwaters reached the roof of the local tavern. Owner Chris Brooks says he's been powerless to prevent the inundation.
People upstream give you indications of what's coming, so you can be somewhat prepared, but, you know, you just can't stop it. All our plant and machinery is under, so all the air conditioning, the cool room, refrigeration, yeah, so all of that's underneath.
Jean Crawford Lane, whose isolated property is near a catchment of the Wollumbi Brook, says it's the worst flooding in years.
We don't know when we'll get out. We don't know when council will be able to fix it. Yeah, we'll have to walk through when the waters finally go down. We'll have to walk through and get people to pick us up on the other side to take us out to get shopping, supplies, all that sort of stuff.
Mayor Sue Moore described the fatigue many are feeling.
Those people out in those low-lying areas of Whittingham, Glenrennie and Combo, they must be so sick of doing this and evacuation, being prepared. The areas of Bulga and Broke, obviously, waking up this morning to find devastating views and property losses. Hopefully they all stay safe.
Ahead of a visit to Sydney's disaster zones, New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet acknowledged the terrible toll.
There's been flood event after flood event. Many people are tired, it's a lot of anguish and despair. But our commitment from a state level and being here with the Commonwealth Government today is that we'll be with you every step of the way.
By his side, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese praised responders and promised more resources. From tomorrow, a third ADF helicopter and 250 defence personnel will join the response. Other states are also chipping in. 31 Victorian emergency service workers have been sent north to help.
Who at the worst of times, we always see the best of Australians. And once again, we're seeing that right now.
There's also more financial support, $1,000 payments for adults in the disaster zones. Children will also receive $400.
We know that this is having a real impact on people, and we want to make sure that the support's available as soon as possible.
That's the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, there, ending that report from Matt Bamford. Well, while some parts of New South Wales are still bracing for major flooding in the next 24 hours, in other areas such as Richmond and Windsor on the Hawkesbury, the water has begun slowly decreasing, leaving residents with a huge clean-up effort. Our reporter David Sparks is on the Hawkesbury River at Windsor in Sydney's northwest. I spoke to him a short time ago.
Well, Sally, the water has come down overnight and so far today. When residents here in Windsor woke up this morning, The water level had fallen by about 80 centimetres. It's probably fallen by more than a metre by now, but it is dropping very slowly. So that means the flood is still extremely high. You know, don't be fooled by the fact that it's started to fall. For a lot of households here, though, it has fallen just enough so that the water's out of their homes, which means the beginning of a major cleanup. It's pretty quiet around here. It's not like, you know, there's a lot of people up and down the street cleaning up. But when you go up and down the streets, you see the houses that have been flooded. People are just doing that bit-by-bit approach, getting things out of the house, a bit of machinery involved in the cleanup. Now, keep in mind that further downstream here on the Hawkesbury, places like Wiseman's Ferry and a few others, the water hasn't started to drop by as much, if at all. So they're still waiting for that chance to clean up.
But David, those who are starting to clean up, what are they telling you about what's happening?
Well, they're certainly saying they've never seen the water get this high before. Some people told me this is the third time their house has been flooded in 18 months. Others said that it was the first time ever for them. I spoke with one woman in South Windsor, Wendy Thompson, and she was cleaning her place when I spoke to her. In the last flood in March, the water just tickled into a small part of her house, but this time it's gone right through her first level. She showed me the waterlogged interior, and I had a chat with her while standing in her kitchen and living room.
It did come up, yeah, about 6 inches on the wall. You can see from all the, probably the dust and the dirt that I haven't gotten rid of, settled there now. And it was bizarre because last night when I was walking through here just to have a look when the water was still here, these floorboards that we're currently standing on were actually floating.
You're kidding.
No.
So the water got under them and pushed them up?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. You would step on it and it would physically go down under the pressure of your weight.
Do you think they're going to be okay? Do you think they'll have to go?
To be honest, I think I'll be ripping them up. I don't know what the water would be underneath. I don't even know if there's insulation that would soak it in underneath as well.
Let's just recap. It got dark here, I guess, about 5 o'clock last night. Yep. Where was the water then?
Yeah, at about 5 o'clock last night, it was lapping, well, it was just over the top of my bottom step to head upstairs.
And then you went to bed at some point in the evening again, and then you got up.
Yeah, so I woke up at about 12:30, and I just thought, well, I'll go and have a look and hope for the best. And when I came back downstairs, the water had gone from the house, thankfully, and I was pretty pleased about that.
Yeah, that's a mixed feeling, I guess, because you're pleased it's gone down, but that moment that water gets out of the house is the moment the hardest work begins.
Absolutely, because when the water's in the house, you sit there and there's nothing you can do other than get emotional and hope for it to go away. And now is the big cleanup, so it's ripping things up, pulling things out, making a big pile out the front for council to eventually pick up.
In terms of the task of the cleanup, you're going to be on your own or what?
Luckily, I do have really great neighbours, and I've got a friend coming over soon, so I've got people pitching in to help me, which is wonderful.
Yeah. What do you think about the future of living here? You're keen to stay? Second thoughts? Different way of preparing? What do you think?
I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. I will just be changing the floors down here. Luckily, yeah, absolutely. I think my flood's built for floods in a funny way. So it's just get rid of the floorboards. I think I'll make it polished concrete. So then next time it floods, not even if.
You think it's just next time?
Oh, just next time for sure.
Yeah.
And then it'll just be clean it out and should be easier.
That's Wendy Thompson there. Her house in South Windsor on the Hawkesbury has been flooded. She was speaking with our reporter, David Sparks. The crisis in New South Wales has sparked calls for urgent reform of the insurance sector. The Insurance Council of Australia is expecting to declare the New South Wales flood event as an insurance catastrophe, with thousands of claims being made. But insurers are already struggling to shoulder the cost of successive floods. And rising premiums are making some homes and some businesses effectively uninsurable. John Daly reports.
Grant Lockhart and his young family live near the Nepean River in the outer Sydney suburb of Camden. His home has been hit by floods 4 times already this year. And for Grant's family, insurance premiums have just become unaffordable.
Just for home contents alone, it's just under $50,000 a year. Yeah, it's unaffordable. Like, we've even rang insurance company, like our insurance company, and they've gone, oh, we must have made a mistake, and then they've put it in again, and they say, oh, they've even advised it's not worth it. So it's frustrating, upsetting, because it's like, well, if we do flood, like, you're going to lose everything, and you're pretty much start from scratch. And we've even considered moving. Like, it's just it's where do you go? We're already into an inflated market where the housing prices are through the roof. So I don't know what to do.
On Monday, major insurer Allianz Australia confirmed it had run through almost 90% of its annual natural catastrophe budget within the first 6 months of this year. And many private insurers are in the same boat. Andrew Hall, Chief Executive of the Insurance Council of Australia, told RN Breakfast the New South Wales flooding will likely be declared an insurance catastrophe.
The rain hasn't stopped and it's spreading now through the Hunter and the Mid-North Coast that this will trigger an insurance catastrophe declaration as well. And it will just add to the what's been a very large rain event now for 2022, which is really now ranks as one of our most significant natural disasters.
Andrew Hall says insurers have already paid out $5 billion in claims this year, and thousands more are now being lodged in New South Wales.
Before the rain started at the end of last week, we were at 225,000 claims from the February-March event in the system. There has been about 2,700 lodged yesterday out of Sydney, but I expect that number will increase.
Andrew Hall has reissued insurers' calls for taxpayer investment in disaster mitigation rather than response.
It's just untenable that we have homes that are flooding four times in 18 months, that we can keep those homes adequately covered in an insurance pool. We've got to stand back and ask the question, have we built homes in the wrong spot?
Research from the Climate Council predicts 1 in 25 homes will be uninsurable by the end of the decade as climate change fuels more disasters. Antonia Settle is an economist at Melbourne University, and she says the private market is failing.
No, we can see that the market's not up to it. We can see already that insurance premiums have become so expensive in some places that those places are effectively uninsurable.
She says Australia needs to follow other countries like the US in setting up publicly funded insurance. Such a program has already been put in place for Northern Australia, with the federal government providing a $10 billion reinsurance pool for cyclones and floods. Antonia Settle says the design of a nationwide taxpayer insurance pool needs to be carefully considered.
So on the one hand, you need to have at-risk pricing. You need to have risk pricing that encourages households to move out of risky areas. But on the other hand, you don't want to have low-income households not being able to afford to have insurance. So there's an equity issue, but there's also that kind of incentives issue.
How urgent is reform needed in the Australian insurance system?
Oh, it's obviously extremely urgent. You know, addressing this issue in legislation is beyond due, well beyond due. This is something we should have been doing 10 years ago.
That's Melbourne University economist Antonia Settle there, ending that report from John Daly. You're listening to The World Today. The Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation is meeting to discuss whether the general population should receive a fourth dose of the COVID vaccine. The extra booster is currently available to anyone over 65, the immunocompromised, those living with a disability, and Indigenous Australians aged over 50. But as COVID cases increase across the country, is it time to make it more widely available? Angus Randall reports.
A boost to my confidence.
A boost to my fitness.
A boost to our social life.
This year, the government's vaccine message has been all about boosters, and most of us seem to have listened. More than two-thirds of adults across the country have had three shots of a COVID vaccine. But those who booked their booster early are coming up on 6 months since their last vaccine, and calls for a fourth dose are getting louder. Australia's independent expert advisory group on vaccines, ATAGI, is meeting today to discuss the expansion of a fourth dose. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says it's inevitable.
My view is that we will inevitably follow what has occurred in other parts of the world and rolled out a further booster shot.
Israel has been offering a fourth vaccine to healthcare workers, people over 60 and those at high risk. It's a similar story in Australia. Anyone over 65 or at high risk can book a fourth dose. Dr. Chris Moy is the Vice President of the Australian Medical Association. He says Israel's fourth dose program showed there was a benefit for those at higher risk, but for everyone else, the effects were minimal.
In terms of Omicron, one of the big problems is that it's so infectious. What they found that giving a fourth shot only produces a transient, in a healthy person, a transient reduction in just the risk of getting an infection. and it wasn't really a great benefit.
He's also concerned about the risks of immunological imprinting, or the more biblical term, original antigenic sin.
If you keep on giving a vaccine against a specific variant repeatedly, what can happen, especially if you give it very quickly, what can happen over time is that your immune system can get a little bit lazy. And if it faces a new variant, just produce a response against the original variant rather than sort of stepping up and responding to new variant.
Dr. Chris Moy says Atagi will be worried about launching a booster rollout too early and then having to respond on the fly if a new variant came along.
There has been a lot of pressure to widen the fourth shot eligibility to everybody, even over the last few months. But had they done that, they would have given a fourth shot with only a transient potential benefit. But then what would they have done if they faced a new threat? Recommend a fifth shot with no current evidence across the world for a fifth shot.
Several states are pushing Atagi to make a fourth dose accessible for everyone as they face rising COVID case numbers. South Australia's Health Minister, Chris Picton, is dealing with around 3,000 new cases a day.
And I think that there's a lot of people in the community who would jump at the chance to get a fourth dose if that was available to them.
And New South Wales Health Minister Brad Hazzard wants action fast. His state has nearly 125,000 active cases.
My view is, as Health Minister in New South Wales, that we need to broaden it and we need to move quickly because basically there's a simple rule in this. Every extra dose helps. So let's get a fourth dose if we can do it.
Meanwhile, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews says healthcare workers should be the next group added to the booster list.
Pressure in our health system at the moment is acute. Principally, the fact that so many staff, literally thousands of staff in any given week, can't report for work. And that means that the load has to be shared amongst those who can report, and that limits our overall capacity.
But Dr. Chris Moy says states should focus on their third shot before pushing for a fourth.
The real things we need to focus on at the moment is making sure that we get our overall booster level rate up, because across Australia, the booster rate is running at about 70% of those who are eligible. And what we know from a recent study is that the booster increases your protection against Omicron by at least 65% and even more in those over the age of 70.
That's Chris Moy, the Vice President of the AMA, ending that report from Angus Randall. The numbers are shocking. In the past 30 years, there have been 55 major inquiries into mental health in Australia. That's more than 55,000 public submissions, 9,000 witnesses, 1,000 hearing days, and more than 1,200 recommendations. Many of the inquiries took place concurrently, but if you ran them end to end, they would take 67 years to complete. A powerful new study catalogues the toll on those who've stepped forward to tell their stories and the cycle of inaction that has followed. Rhonda Wilson is Professor of Nursing and Midwifery at the University of Newcastle and is a co-author of the study.
Those numbers are just very, very painful, I think, to hear. It's very concerning. The numbers are so large, it's quite horrifying. You know, there are thousands and thousands who have contributed their personal stories. And a lot of those stories are born of trauma and are re-traumatised in the retelling. My heart and mind really go to the people, the contributors that have come forward in the hope to make things better.
So people keep stepping forward with their stories and with their insights, but what kind of cycle of inquiry and inaction do we see?
What we see is governments hearing that there is some problem and deciding to run another inquiry. Rather than taking action, it appears there is this cycle of reinventing that occurs, establishing another review. Very little has actually been done to address the recommendations of these 55 inquiries.
Do we sometimes see the same or similar recommendations coming out of several inquiries?
Well, that's the really interesting thing. We went through the 1,200 recommendations that arose from those inquiries over that 30-year period. We don't see change. We see repetition of inaction.
How do nurses and other health professionals get the balance right between advocating on issues but also supporting people as well?
We currently have in Australia 24,111 mental health nurses working in mental health settings in Australia. That's about 90 full-time equivalent mental health nurses per 100,000 population. People are reporting higher than ever before levels of psychological distress. Mental health nurses actually have a responsibility to advocate for the mental health and well-being of people in their communities and to alleviate the perpetuation of trauma. With 24,000 plus mental health nurses in Australia, we have quite a strong voice.
You've been involved in this sector for a long time. Even with your experience, were you surprised by the numbers and the extent of the number of inquiries that have come out in your review?
I certainly have been in this field for a very long time. And in fact, I recall 30 years ago when the Burdekin inquiry was underway, and it was a very important time in the history of mental health in Australia. There were a number of recommendations made, and they're still being made today in inquiries. The most recent inquiry suggests that some of those recommendations have never been listened to. So was I surprised? Perhaps I shouldn't have been as surprised as I was, but when we started to actually pull all of those inquiries, list all of the recommendations and count them, we were absolutely astonished at the scale. We knew it would be large, we knew it would be shocking, but we could not have envisaged that it would be as shocking as these numbers actually reveal, particularly in the context of COVID, current floods. We've got increasing interest rates in Australia. There is a lot of pressure on the mental health of Australia. We came into this knowing full well, it appears from all of these reports, knowing full well that our mental health service in Australia was very flawed in many ways. And so now we come back to this. We know where some of the answers lie. This report, I think, has come at an important time for Australia, for us to consider how will we plan when we're coming from a baseline that is very challenging indeed.
That's Professor Rhonda Wilson from the University of Newcastle. Finally today, the Commonwealth Bank is the first of the big four banks to increase its interest rates a day after the Reserve Bank lifted the official cash rate. Its home loan variable interest rate will rise by 0.5 percentage point from next Friday. The government insists it's working to improve the state of the economy to ensure that inflation improves. Rani Hayman reports.
The first interest rate rise in more than a decade came in May, just before the federal election. There was another one in June, and then yesterday the Reserve Bank lifted its cash rate again by another 0.5 percentage points. The Commonwealth Bank is taking the lead in passing the latest rate rise on to customers in full. Australian Banking Association Chief Executive Anna Bligh.
Well, of course, every bank will make their own decision, but I would think that the RBA would be expecting all financial institutions to be lifting their rates in accordance with the cash rate. That's how the monetary policy works.
The rate will be 1.35%, up from 0.85% last month. Analysts say this was very much in line with market expectations, and it's expected there'll be more rises this year. But what does this mean for homeowners? Anna Bligh says some will be able to cope.
It is going to be, I think, quite tough for some people. But we also know that for a range of reasons, particularly the unusual nature of the last couple of years, a very, very high number of Australians with a mortgage are now months ahead in that mortgage.
According to RateCity, the average owner-occupier with a $500,000 loan and 25 years remaining will see their repayments rise by $137 a month. Adding up the May, June and July hikes, the total increase in monthly repayments will be $333. But what about for people who bought when interest rates were at the COVID emergency levels?
You will be faced with the decision to tighten your belt in other areas of your expenditure. That's exactly what the Reserve Bank wants the economy to do. tighten its belt to pull back inflation.
The central bank is increasing the cash rate for three consecutive months to quell soaring inflation. RBA Governor Philip Lowe says the board is committed to doing what's necessary to ensure inflation in Australia returns to the target band of 2 to 3%. But the RBA still expects inflation to hit 7% later this year, up from 5.1% currently. Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers agrees inflation will get worse before it gets better.
You can't flick a switch. Fix all of these issues that we've got in our economy. They are big and substantial, but we've started the work. We're working around the clock to make sure that we can implement our economic plan for the economy without adding to these inflationary pressures and get some decent wages growth.
None of the other major banks has announced a move just yet.
That's Rani Hayman there. And that's all from the World Today team for this Wednesday. Stay tuned to the ABC. We'll be back again at the same time tomorrow. I'm Sally Sara.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. What's going on with the weather? After months of torrential rain up and down the east coast, New South Wales is being hit again by severe flooding. Today, my colleague Gavin Coote takes us to the hardest hit communities. And University of New South Wales climate scientist Argos Santoso explains why there could be much more rain to come. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.